Perry Parish. It's Sunday, December 8, 2019. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and I want to take a moment to thank all of the new listeners, specifically the folks who have been nice enough to go subscribe via Apple Podcasts, give us a five-star review, and leave a nice comment, because it's making a difference. We've now settled in as the most listened to college basketball podcast on Apple Podcasts regularly, and this is now one of the most listened to basketball podcasts, NBA, college hoops, any kind of basketball podcast. It's one of the most listened to basketball podcasts in the world, so that's super cool, and it's obviously a huge testament to you guys, so thank you. And if you're listening right now but still haven't subscribed to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast for whatever reason, please go do that when you get a moment. And while you're there, please provide a five-star rating and a nice review, because it really does help grow the podcast and expose it to more people. And each Sunday, like I've told you, I'm going to highlight my favorite review of the week and shout out the person who left it. In other words, you leave a nice review, you could get shouted out like Larnell and Devin Downey. And if you subscribe, you won't have to wait for a tweet from me or Norlander to know when a new episode is available. It'll just pop right into your phone within minutes of it being uploaded. So please do that when you get a moment. I thank you in advance. Now to basketball. I want to start by discussing Ohio State, because the Buckeyes beat the absolute crap out of another quality opponent this weekend. Final score, Ohio State 106, Penn State 74. So that's a 32-point win over a Penn State team that entered the game ranked 23rd at KenPom. The Nittany Lions are now 26, which means as of this moment, Ohio State has three wins by at least 20 points over top 50 KenPom teams. And according to Hoop Vision's Jordan Sperber, the rest of the country, like the other 352 Division I teams combined, only have three wins by at least 20 points over top 50 KenPom teams, which means Ohio State has already done something three times that the entire rest of the country has only also done three times. It's just incredible. So Ohio State is now number five in offensive efficiency, number two in defensive efficiency, number one at KenPom, number two at Sagarin, number two in the CBS Sports, top 25 and one. Norlander. Yeah, listen, I think you and I both knew Ohio State would be good because they returned some key pieces and Chris Holtmann is excellent. Did you think they'd be this good? They are killing people. And now, again, number one at KenPom.
No, not even close to not even close. Maybe that's a little too thick. But, yeah, Jordan's stat, I retweeted that on Saturday. That's a really, really good one. And in light of what the Buckeyes were able to do, just wipe the floor with Penn State thoroughly. And, you know, that was a secondary TV game, but I did have it on, and it was extremely impressive. And Caleb Wesson has been the star of the team to this point in the season. But, you know, as we mentioned on the Friday podcast, they do have more than just him. And DJ Carton is really coming he's coming into his own. I like so much of what he's been able to do. So, yeah, I mean, this is the best. Remember when I said that Ohio State was the best team in the Big Ten, and you said, are you going to pretend like Mark Turgeon doesn't exist? Do you remember when that happened?
I vaguely remember that, yes.
And then do you remember how Maryland should have lost at home to Illinois and really had – we're not going to dedicate any time on this podcast to that game because it was hideous. Maryland had no business beating Illinois. Did you happen to catch any of that game, by the way?
Yeah, they were down big, 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 and I was stressed out because it had a real impact on the top 25 and one. But then Anthony Cowan got going down the stretch, and Maryland escapes. A win is a win is a win, Norlander.
A win is a win, and I have been driving the Cowan bus, as you well know, and on that note, I was happy to see it, but Maryland and Illinois will get their due in time to come. But yeah, that reinforced my belief that right now Ohio State is clearly the best team in the Big Ten, and, you know, according to some metrics, operating as the best team in college basketball right now. KenPom has caught up with Torvik. I mean, Ohio State was number one in Torvik before KenPom, and now in light of what happened on Saturday, it's there as well. Dwayne Washington, solid player, better than I thought he'd be so far this season. Luther Muhammad also. They both had 14 in the game on Saturday. I'm actually more of a seller on Penn State as opposed to most other metrics, and I think even voters, but I'm willing to concede that I'm going to be wrong on the Nittany Lions. I didn't think they'd be an NCAA tournament team. I think that is going to wind up probably being the case, but I thought Ohio State would win this game easily, but not to this tune. I mean, when you're just romping teams of top 25 caliber by 25-plus points regularly, it's outstanding. And since I'm glad you opted to start the podcast with this with Ohio State here, Paris, that you wanted to do this, because since they don't have like a clear cut stud star, and since Holtmann, he's not this like amazing quote. He hasn't been in charge of a prominent program for a decade plus. They just go a little bit under the radar here. They don't have a style of play that's, you know, it doesn't have a ton of sex appeal, so to speak, right now. But 106.74 is very sexy. 9-0 is very sexy. Number one in multiple mainstream metrics is very sexy. Congrats to the Buckeyes. I look forward to you guys firmly being in the top five, potentially even the top three when the polls refresh on Monday.
You can speak for yourself, Norlander. Me personally, I would have intercourse with Ohio State style of play.
Oh, you would?
Yes.
Okay, well, you wouldn't even need a drink beforehand.
I mean, I'd probably have a drink beforehand.
Maybe, well, okay, I see you might need a little coercing. All right.
I mean, I'd probably have a drink.
All right.
I mean, that sounds in character for me.
Sure.
But I'm physically attracted to Ohio State style of play. Did you catch this fact about Ohio State? I guess it's been true now since last week. I didn't notice it when it first became true, when they pounded North Carolina. But I, when reading about them yesterday, I stumbled into it. So Ohio State has already beaten two top 10 teams by at least 25 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's only happened three times in the history of the AP poll.
I think that was either flashed. That was either talked about in the game, flashed on the screen, because I did see that. And it seemed too few. Like, you would have, you know, if you had a guess, like, you would assume that would have happened 10 plus times. But what I don't know, and I don't know if you have it or not, are the teams that have actually done it.
I do.
Okay.
So Ohio State has just become the fourth team. They did it last week, became the fourth team in AP poll history to beat two top 10 teams by at least 25 points in the same season. So the season's early and they've already done it. They beat Villanova when Villanova was number 10, 76-51. They beat North Carolina last week when North Carolina was number 7, 74-59. Only three other teams in the history of college basketball have done that, beaten two top 10 teams in the same season by at least 25 points. One of them is 1968 UCLA.
Understandable.
Another one is 2001 Duke.
Mm.
And the most recent one, the third one, is 2016 Villanova.
I thought you were going to trivia time me.
I got a trivia time.
Oh, it's coming. Okay.
Don't even worry about it.
Okay.
The others, so it's 68 UCLA, 2001 Duke, 2016 Villanova. Here's what's interesting. Each of those teams
won the title.
Went on to win the national title.
Mm, that's
so every team that's ever done what Ohio State has already done has gone on to win the national title, for whatever that's worth. Trivia time.
Go ahead. I'm actually trying to think of the two teams Villanova did it against. One was Oklahoma. I'm almost positive.
Here's the trivia time. What two top 10 teams did Villanova beat by at least 25 points in the 2015-16 season?
Oh, God, our brains just sexually attracted to each other, I guess.
You went too far.
Okay.
You took it too far. If I was in a bar late at night with you and Ohio State style of play.
I got no chance.
I'm definitely hooking it with Ohio State style of play.
These are just dynamite openings to the podcast, by the way. Dead deer and attractiveness to styles of play of college basketball teams. All right. Oklahoma's one of them, correct?
Yep. Correct. It's 95-51 in the Final Four when Oklahoma was sixth in the AP poll and a number two seed in the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
What's interesting about this is I actually remember both of these games. And that might not mean anything to most people. I don't remember things like this.
Well,
I actually remember watching both of these games.
All right. So, other ones in the regular season?
Correct.
Hmm.
The reason I remember it is because of the day it was played.
Okay. Did you have a child born on that day or something?
No, but it was like, okay. It was a day where I know we've got plans later on this night, and now I've got this wild result that I've got to deal with for the top 25 and one. I actually remember it being on this day.
Wow. I'm trying to think. Okay, my guess.
What's a holiday where you might have plans?
And it's New Year's. So did Villanova beat a top 10 Xavier team on New Year's Eve?
That's correct. 95-64 on New Year's Eve.
Love
when
it.
Xavier was ranked sixth in the country.
Hey, just for the record here, like, I'm not looking at this. I'm that's straight from The noggin, right up here. I'm not cheating. I'm not looking. I tried to deduce what would have been the most likely scenario there. Bada boom. Is that, hold on, last thing. I don't know if you have their schedule up. Is that the same? I believe that's the same season that same Villanova team got just stomped, unless I'm wrong on the years. But didn't Creighton kill him that same season?
Let me see.
Absurdly killed him. Creighton, did you have
that? That was not the same year.
Not the same year that Creighton killed Villanova? Really?
No, they did not lose to Creighton.
Okay, so no, I guess not, because that would have been Rogge and that McDermott. That might have been the year before. Okay, anyway, continue.
The year Creighton, I'm looking now.
That had to be the year before then. It was a January game.
That was not the year before.
Creighton fans are like, it was this one.
It was 2013-14 season, McDermott's. January 20th.
Yeah.
Villanova loses at home to Creighton 96-68.
McDermott senior season, right?
I guess.
Yeah, that's McDermott senior season. I'm surprised that those – it's a weird time, man.
It was definitely Doug McDermott's senior season. And here's what's so wild about that 2015-16 Villanova season. So they win the national championship, obviously. They beat Oklahoma by 44 in the Final Four. Do you remember they lost to that same Oklahoma team
in Hawaii
in December by 23?
In Hawaii, yes, I remember. Because it was a random game in a random building. It was broadcast on Fox. And that's the same Oklahoma team with Buddy Hield that went to triple overtime against Kansas on like January 3rd of that season.
So that season, Villanova and Oklahoma played twice. First time, Oklahoma wins by 23. Second time, Villanova wins by 44. It's a 67-point swing.
Crazy.
in 80 minutes of basketball. Back to Ohio State real quick. You mentioned Caleb Wesson. He's been good again this season. He's averaging 14.1 points, a career-high 9.3 rebounds. He's taken 3.2 three-pointers per game and making 44.8% of them. He was 4 of 6 from 3 against Penn State, finished with 28-10. And what's interesting with him is, I don't know how much you've watched him, but he doesn't even look like the same person, or at least he looks noticeably lighter, and he is. Read a story on him from back in September. I think Brian Bennett at The Athletic did it, and Caleb had told him, at the end of last season, he weighed 289 pounds. 289 pounds. And in September, he was down to 255. 34-pound difference. Now, I think he's put on some of that back as the season approached. I looked at his official weight on the Ohio State website. It's listed at 270. But either way, he's at least like 20 pounds lighter than he's been. And remember, he was suspended last season for three games.
Yeah.
And Ohio State went 0-3 in those games. And though I don't know that there was ever a official explanation other than violation of, you know, school policy, it was – all indications are that it was a failed substance abuse or a failed drug test. I mean, that's what it appeared to be. And so he goes and works out for, you know, he decides to test the waters because why wouldn't you? And he goes and works out with the Hawks and with the Celtics, and they both told him two things. One, you need to go back to school. And two, you are not going to ever play in the NBA at 290 pounds. Like you can't do that at your height. Mm-hmm. It's too heavy. So what did he do? He went back to school and he got in shape, and now he's the best player on perhaps the best team in the country. That's pretty good.
Good on him. Yes, I remember when he got suspended last season because there was consternation amongst Ohio State, even in terms of if it wanted to protest the ruling, because if it did, he got more time, but they might need the wins in the Big Ten tournament, and Ohio State was a bubble team. They didn't know it was going to happen. It all worked out, relatively speaking. Ohio State got in. It was an 11 seed, and even it won a game before falling to Houston in the NCAA tournament. But yeah, no, good on OSU. Its next game comes, they got finals this week, so Ohio State doesn't play again until at Minnesota. We'll see if Ohio State can wear this and stand proud. Unlike, I hesitate to bring it up, but I do just want to mention, you know, gave DePaul all this love.
Yeah.
DePaul goes out and loses at home to Buffalo. We still like you, DePaul. I don't know if Parrish is going to have you ranked Monday or not, and don't even spoil it here for the podcast. Check out the CBSSportsApper.com in the morning on Monday, and you will find out if indeed DePaul is still ranked or not. But Ohio State, you know, it's as it's undefeated 9-0, its next home, test will be away from home at Minnesota on Sunday, December 15th.
Norlander, I can tell you, you can't have their resume with a home loss to Buffalo.
I'm just trying to drive people to read your stuff. Okay.
I spent the last 30 minutes or so identifying replacements for DePaul in the top 25 and one. I've got three. I think I've got it figured out. So it's all good. But DePaul, they will have to earn their way back in. So like you said, for Ohio State, Minnesota next Sunday, then a home game 2 days after that against Southeast Missouri State, and then showdown with Kentucky on December 21st in the CBS Sports Classic in Las Vegas. We'll both be there. So that'd be a good time, right?
That'll be a great time. I'm looking forward to it. Who will not be there? Baylor and Arizona. They had an interesting game, right?
Baylor and Arizona did have an interesting game. Baylor wins at 63-58 on Saturday down in Waco. We're going to get into that next. But first, check this out.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
So number 18, Baylor, beat number 12, Arizona, 63-58 on Saturday. Strange game in Waco, and the strange thing about it was that it was a Baylor home game that kind of looked and sounded like an Arizona home game, and that's because Baylor, as Norlander noted on Friday's podcast, made free tickets available to encourage fans to attend the game because school officials were worried that their fans would rather attend or just watch on television the Big 12 title game between the Baylor football team and Oklahoma, as opposed to the basketball game between Baylor and Arizona. And because they were like happening at the same time. So this was a creative way to get fans in the building. And it did. It did get fans in the building, but it appeared to be mostly Arizona fans. Baylor fans still decided, you know what? We appreciate the offer. We'd still just rather watch football on television. Arizona fans snatched the tickets up. So Baylor had to more or less play a road game at home against a top 15 team with multiple future NBA players. And Baylor won anyway. So shouts to Scott Drew. Shouts to Terry Teagle, of course. And shouts to you, Norlander, because this is one you picked correctly on Friday.
It is, but we both went 2-3. So I had Baylor here, you know, as a presumptive 4-point favorite. You took Zona. But the only other one I won was Dayton. We both had Dayton covering 3, and then I lost. We both had Colorado. It was nowhere close to getting 8 against Kansas. We both had Florida, nowhere close against Butler. We'll get to the Bulldogs on our next podcast. And then I took Washington. You rightfully took Gonzaga. We'll get to that in a little bit here. But, yeah, we both, by the way, had a 2-3 week. So that puts me at 10-14-1, and it puts – puts you at 10-14-1 and me at 11-13-1 if I have that correct.
Correct.
Okay. So, by the way, they played the football game, rightfully so. Did you see when you were watching? Like they'd come back from commercial and they had the Baylor Oklahoma game on the video boards up top. Now I don't know if that was only for during the commercials. You couldn't tell it's during game action. They're showing the actual basketball being played. But you mentioned Baylor fans preferred to watch the game on television. You could have gotten a double dip. You could have gotten in for free, and I guess presumably been able to watch the game on the big screen or on your phone. The way these things work, you can watch the game on your phone and go to the basketball game. Whatever. Arizona fans got into the building. They were the majority. Baylor gets the win anyway. Good on them. Arizona is knocked from the ranks of the beaten in doing that. And by the way, I mentioned DePaul, mentioned Arizona. We are now down, just to inform the listening public here, we are now down to 8 teams without a scar. You've got San Diego State, Ohio State, Liberty, Louisville, Maryland, Butler, Auburn, and can you name the 8th team? Trivia time, impromptu. Can you name me the 8th team? Here we go. Liberty, Louisville, San Diego State, Ohio State, Auburn, Maryland, Butler. Who's the eighth team?
I was gonna assume you were gonna leave Liberty out, and then I would be able to yell Liberty because I happen to watch their game on. I had their game on earlier tonight against Grand Canyon. Who is the other undefeated team? Is it a top 25 team?
It's not.
Liberty was the lowest one I thought there was. Is it somebody lower than Liberty?
I don't know where this team is in relation in the metrics to Liberty. It might be ranked higher, but actually, if I had to guess, I would guess that it's ranked lower. It has not played a true home game this season because its arena is not available for playing.
I should know it then just based off of that, but I do not believe I know the answer to this question.
The Dukes of Duquesne are.
I did know that. I saw Ken Pomeroy tweet about it like over the weekend. He said that they might be the last undefeated team based on schedule.
That is correct. Yeah. Even though they don't have a true home game, they're not the most likely, but it's not outlandish to think that when we get to early to mid-January, Duquesne might actually be the team that's still standing without a loss at that point. But we wait and see. As for Baylor, Arizona. You know, low scoring. To me, my biggest takeaway. Now, I didn't know if you were gonna get, you know, Nico on the floor, Nico Mannion and Josh Green. They both wound up playing. Baylor had its best defensive performance of the season, which was the biggest takeaway for me. Like, do you expect Arizona to go in and get the win? No, not necessarily. But keep it close, ideally, yeah. And so, you know, Zona takes a loss. Whatever. It's a totally respectable loss for Baylor, which only has one loss on its schedule by 3 points on a neutral back in the first week of the season against Washington. I thought this was just a strong win. Now, you know, Baylor owns a random road win against Coastal Carolina. It has defeated Villanova by almost double digits and gets the win over Arizona in advance of hosting Butler. So, you know, in consecutive games, Baylor's going to host undefeated teams from power conferences, and it was by far their best defensive performance of the season, I thought, opponent considering, and that's a really strong thing and a good thing for Scott Drew's crew, who was projected by plenty to be a top three team in the Big 12 heading into the season. Big 12 is really, really good yet again. Might be the best team conference in America. You know, as we stand right here right now, I wouldn't move off of that. To me, Baylor looks top three material in the Big 12, and it's a loaded league as is.
To me, the most interesting thing about this game and Baylor in general right now is Tristan Clark. He got 0 points in 10 minutes against Arizona, and he's doing nothing this season.
I know.
Absolutely. Nothing. Now, people might not, without context, know, like, you might not know who Tristan Clark is. He averaged 14.6 points and 6.3 rebounds last season for Baylor. He only played 14 games. He had to have season-ending knee surgery. But, you know, he ended up being the second leading scorer on the team and the leading rebounder on the team. And he was leading the nation in field goal percentage when he got hurt at 73.7% from the field. And so then he has season-ending knee surgery, and he's going to be healthy to start the season. And honestly, we just had a blind spot for this because looking back on it, we should have been smarter. We had him 19th in our top 101 players, clearly the highest-rated Baylor player. And yet I went back and I was reading like some preseason stuff or like some early season stuff, and Scott Drew is on record saying, like, listen, this is going to take some time. Like, he's just not. I don't think these are Scott's words exactly, but certainly the implication was he's not the same dude right now, and it's going to be a while. And perhaps we should have known that, A, because he missed time, and B, because he was coming off of knee surgery. So on one hand, it's like, Tristan Clark is not a relevant basketball player right now. He's just a bit player at Baylor. On the other hand, Baylor looks awesome. And the player who was supposed to be their best player is giving them nothing. So if he starts to give them something, maybe they take it to another level.
And Jared Butler has become the guy since Tristan Clark hasn't been able to be the guy. I mean, he's hit 27 of his 57 three-pointers. That's 47% from beyond the arc, shooting 50% from two, a 90% foul shooter. A sophomore lead guard who has been terrific, and he has been their best player. He's a fun one to watch. I understand if you're not a Baylor fan, if you don't watch a ton of Big 12, they're not loaded with potential first-round guys the way they were 6, 7, 9 years ago, but still plenty of talent there. And for me, my question was defensively, can this team be what it you know, it's capable of. And against Arizona, at least, considering the athletes and talent that Arizona has and how it's looked, it was just a, it was a big step forward. With Arizona, you know, save them for another time. I'm actually going to be at Gonzaga, Arizona on Saturday. So when we talk Friday, I will not have anything, you know, I'll have everything to unload on Arizona. But for me, the result was more about Baylor and them keeping up and getting a big win. You want worst case scenario, you get Arizona, Butler back-to-back games at home in like a 5-day span. You want to split 1-1 minimally. They got the win, and now, you know, they wait on Butler. If they get that win there, then they'll have a serious resume, like probably a top 5 resume in the country if they beat Butler on Tuesday night. We'll wait and see if that's the case. But right now, things are looking good.
You're going all the way to Tucson?
I am. Yeah, I am going to Tucson. Yes.
For one game, or are you doing something else?
I am obviously working on a number of things, yes.
Okay. Yes. Stuff you can't top secret stuff. You can't.
No, I'm just – I got a couple of features in the works, and yes, so that's – yes. And no, they're not flying me out just to write a 700-word gamer on Gonzaga, Arizona.
Well, tell everybody what it is you're going to be working on so the Athletic can beat you there.
Yeah, no, there's no shot that's happening.
I bet the Athletic's going to be there. Them dudes are everywhere.
I will say this is dovetailed nicely. I am going to do a feature on Zeke Nagy, but that was planned like before he became awesome. Arizona's Zeke Nagy's been a 1B to Nico Mannion's 1A in terms of value on the team. So that that'll be something, and I will do something on Nico in addition to something on Gonzaga.
All right, let's move on to a Sunday afternoon game, because Virginia and North Carolina got together, and predictably, it was ugly. Final score of number 5, Virginia, 56, number 7, North Carolina, 47. The two top 10 teams combined to shoot just 34.7% from the field, 22.6% from three-point range. UNC was actually 1 of 14 from beyond the arc. Cole Anthony had the lone make. He also missed 5. So now North Carolina is 1-3 in its past 4 games. Each loss, in fairness, is to a top 10 KenPom team. So that's not horrible. Top 12 KenPom team. So it's not embarrassing, but still, like, it's not good. You worried about North Carolina yet?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, first time that Roy Williams hasn't had a team that he's coached been able to crack 50 in back-to-back games. That's concerning. And I saw Caroline Darney of SB Nation actually tweet that it's the first time that Carolina as a program hasn't cracked 50 in back-to-back games since the 1947-48 season. Certainly concerning. Now, some of that's a function of Virginia. I get all that. But
And Ohio State, by the way, they have just played in back-to-back games, North Carolina, the number 1 and number 2 teams in terms of adjusted defensive efficiency. Yeah. So they ran into the 2 best defenses in the country in back-to-back games. That's some of this, but also some of this is North Carolina's not good offensively right now.
They're not good offensively. This is the first time, by the way, that UNC has lost at least 3 of its first 9 games since 2010-2011. If you want to feel good, if you're a Carolina fan, they rallied that season. I mean, they were still good nonetheless. Wound up as top 10-12 kind of team in America, and wound up with a 2 seed, fell to Kentucky in the Elite Eight that season. Carolina fans will remember that well. But offensively they're weak. This was to be expected. I mean, Virginia is still holding teams to about 43.5 points a game, and I have serious doubts that there is going to be a team that cracks 60 on Virginia at Virginia this season. Maybe not another team other than Vermont's going to get more than 50, but 8 of 10 Virginia opponents so far have not been able to get more than 50 this season. So it's a combo of having a road game, playing a good team like Virginia, great defense like Virginia, not having a lot of playmakers around Cole. And Cole's been very good, but he has not been efficient, and that's the problem. And I still think he's – a lot's working, but I still – like, it's not – it just doesn't seem as – I don't want to say easy, but there was something last season with Kobe White that just seemed to click more. And I know it's mostly a function of having more talent experience around him. Cole doesn't have that. It was nice to see Armando Bacot recover from injury and play against Virginia, because they, even though they lost, they needed him for the effort there. But yeah, there's obviously some pressing now. North Carolina is sitting at 6-3. It's going to have a week. You're going to notice a lot of teams are going to play only one game or no games this week because it's finals for so many schools. So UNC will stew on back-to-back losses in 3 of its past 4 for a full week before it hosts Wofford a week from now. And actually, I think that's in Carmichael. I think that's the game they're playing in their old gym, which is kind of a cool deal. Will be a cool environment. But then after that, they're gonna have to go on the road and play at Gonzaga. So it's more concerning for Carolina. For Virginia, you're just glad to get Parrish. I mean, you're glad to get the win after getting stomped by Purdue. It's nice to kind of get back and on the path. And we should have no reason to talk Virginia hoops for until the new year. Stony Brook, South Carolina, Navy, and then Virginia Tech. Those are four games. Their next four games are all at JPJ. The average, you know, the average point scored for those four teams, I'm going to guess, is about 47. So sitting at 8-1, they're going to stay in the rank. The rankings, they're going to be in the rankings when they refresh on Monday. They're not going anywhere. But in terms of how we gauge Virginia going forward, we're not going to really have a real discussion about that and an analysis on it until they're in ACC play in that, you know, first, second week of January.
By the way, let's stop trusting coaches on medical diagnoses.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Willard's like, Miles Powell is paralyzed,
and he take it down just a notch.
He played the next game, and then Roy Williams is like, Baycott's he ain't gonna be playing anytime soon. And then I see the tweets before the game. They're like, Baycott's going through warm-ups. I'm like, what? Like,
what
I'm not even listening to these coaches anymore. Why are they so wrong about normal basketball stuff?
I don't know, but shame on us. I was surprised. I didn't think he was playing. I was surprised to see the news that come up that he was going to, you know, be a game time decision, give it a go in warm ups and see if he can go. And sure enough, he was capable. But you're right. This is a new affliction hitting the coaching community.
Every time somebody twists anything, it's like he's probably out till February. And then you turn on the next game and he's like playing 27 minutes. So whatever. On North Carolina, I don't know if you saw this, but there was an interesting moment with Roy and his team. It looked like it was from shoot around, right? They let the cameras into shoot around, and Roy was talking to his players and he asked him, he was like, so who was our leading scorer last season? And somebody was like, you know, Cam Johnson. I don't even know what it was, but he was like, somebody said Cam, and he was like, yep. And somebody was like, he was like, who's next? And he was like, Kobe. Yeah, Kobe was good. Who else? Well, Luke. Yep, Luke was good. And so they list right. Like five names, and Roy's like, okay, now look around. None of them are here. So we have to play better defense.
Thanks, coach.
Yeah, he was basically like, listen, we scored last season, but the guys who scored aren't here, and you idiots aren't scoring. So, like, we've got to really guard to have a chance to win. And by guard, I guess he meant we're going to have to hold somebody in the 40s because we can't crack 50 for back-to-back games. So he seems to know that it wasn't just like, ah, man, we just had a rough night against Ohio State. Like, he knows, like, they can't score right now. And he was talking to his team about it before. And after the game, you know, his press conference, it's typical. I think Roy says this, like, every other year. He says it's the most frustrated he's ever been as a basketball coach. He says it every other year at least, right?
Without a doubt, yes.
But he did say it tonight. He's like, listen, this is the most frustrated I've ever been. Like, we're not playing basketball the way I want to play basketball. And he accurately noted in his press conference, he's like, we had one assist at halftime. How's that even happen? We played 20 minutes of basketball. We're trying to push pace. We can't do it. Trying to make shots. We're 1 of 14 from three. Trying to share the ball. We had one assist in the first half. So I don't know if it's as frustrated as he's ever been, but he does seem frustrated. UNC, again, lost its top five scores from last season. Leading returning scorer was Garrison Brooks, who only averaged 7.9. Points per game last season. Again, though, if you're trying to look at a positive, they just played the two best defensive teams in America. So that's got something to do with it. But it should also be noted, I went and looked this up.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, North Carolina is, they have an adjusted offensive efficiency rating that is in the 30s, 36th in the country. And if they don't improve drastically, this will be the first time that they've fallen outside of the top 11 since the 2013-14 season.
Mm.
Consistently, year after year, they've been in the top 11 in offensive efficiency. Right now, 36th. That 2013-14 team lost 10 times. So they're going to have to really improve pretty drastically to get back to where they usually are. And I don't know if they have the personnel to do that. With Virginia, how about this? They just beat a top 10 team today with 16 made field goals.
They did, dude. They did not get points on the board until Mamadi Diakite hit foul shots with like 14:30 to go in the game.
I know, because when I turned it on, I swear to God, when I turned it on, it was 2-0. It was 5 minutes into the game. 2-0.
It was like, I tweeted, it was like 9-5 with like 9 minutes to go in the first half. What are we doing?
At halftime, the sideline reporter, and I her name escapes me, forgive me, but she's doing one question with Tony Bennett at halftime, and she says, Coach, so I don't remember what they had. They had like, I think they were in the 20s. Like
they rallied late, yeah. They scored like 6 points in 40 seconds. It was insane, yeah.
Right, so whatever. They had a low point total relative to normal basketball games. And she said, Coach, what do you have to do to get your offense back on track?
That's an existential question.
Tony looked at her and he was like, well, because Tony's a gentleman. He would never like he would never be disrespectful or flippant or whatever. But he said, well, you know, this is what we are right now. he was like, we kind of are on track if you've been paying attention. We are perfectly on track for what we are right now. So they end up winning the game with 56 points. Think about ever in the history of North Carolina basketball in the shot clock era, beating North Carolina by 9 points when you only score 56. I mean, that should never, ever, ever happen, and yet it happened this afternoon. They only had 16 made field goals in each of the past two games. Virginia has 16 in each of the past two games. That's a season low. And they are somehow, despite all these struggles, still 8-1 with a win over North Carolina. They are 8-1 with an offensive efficiency rating that ranks 126th in the country. There is not another top 69 KenPom team with an offensive efficiency rating that ranks outside of the top 120. And yet Virginia is number 10 at KenPom with an offensive efficiency rating that ranks 126th. And the next lowest offensive efficiency ranking for a currently ranked team was Washington, which lost earlier today. It was 100th before the Gonzaga game. So you can split this a couple different ways. On one hand, like, my God, Virginia, how good can you be with 16 field goals a game? And the answer is still pretty good. Like, still probably a top 15, top 20 team, even if they don't get any better offensively, which is insane. You should never be able to – you shouldn't be able to rank 126 in adjusted offensive efficiency and still beat top 10 teams and be a top 10 team, and yet Virginia probably will.
And so put a bow on it. Tony Bennett has defeated Roy Williams. UVA has defeated UNC 5 straight times in 8 of the past 11. That's also a source of Roy Williams's frustration here. Virginia very much has North Carolina's number here, in recent seasons. And then if you're dating back to the past 5 or 6 overall, which is similar, by the way, I mean, you had the door open to segue there, but I'm going to take it. That's similar to the fact that Washington and Gonzaga, which met on Sunday night, Gonzaga has now knocked off Washington 6 consecutive times, which is surprising and is not at the same time. And Gonzaga has a 7-game win streak against Pac-12 teams. I mean, this is the class of all schools beyond the Rocky Mountains. It maintains that. A strong performance by Gonzaga. Had 5 guys in double figures. Killian Tilly was terrific. I mean, if you listen to the podcast and you're able to watch that game, and I hope you watched it because it was entertaining, because Gonzaga kept trying to, shush Washington away, and they were just always in this, 3-7-point barrier. They just could not get over the hump. But it was a really well-played, exciting game. But you saw why Mark Few has just banged the drum for Killian Tilly forever. Because if he plays the way that he did against Washington, then yes, Gonzaga is a Final Four contender. There's no doubt about it. He got other help there, but Tilly, to me, was the most valuable person on both ends of the floor. He had big buckets late. He had good defense overall. Gonzaga's able to get the win there to maintain only having one loss overall right now. And, that's obviously a top-10 level team by nature of that win, and they're now at 10-1.
Killian Tilly, 15 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, 4 steals. He's looking like the player he was 2 years ago. And if you want to circle this back, we can go back to Tristan Clark. Like, maybe that's just what this is going to be, because Killian Tilly came back last season, wasn't good. But now he's, you got a year post surgery, and now he's back to looking like the guy he was. Again, the numbers were across the board, box score, good stuff. But he also, as you noted, big shot late, just knocked down a big shot late. Bill Walton afterward called him the same thing you called him, the most important, most valuable player on the court in this game. And Bill Walton also said Gonzaga, the best program in the West. And I think that's pretty clear right now. I mean, you could have made an argument a few years ago for Arizona. But given everything that's happened at Arizona, and I'm not even trying to get into that, it's just like Gonzaga is top shelf basketball, consistent winner in the sport. And they were reminded people of that on Sunday night. They went at 83-76 to improve to 10-1. And I love the post game. I don't know if you noticed this, but, you know, OK, final buzzer, intense game. I mean, like neither team was out of it ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Washington just could never. It felt like it was a 4-point game the entire game. That's what
right.
It felt.
Yes.
And so after the intense game, in-state rivalry, usually when coaches, that happens, you're going to get the blow-by handshake and, like, barely even look at each other. And yet Mark and Mike, they stop. Mm-hmm. They hug. Mm-hmm. They talk. I just thought it was great. Like, you know, coaches could learn something from that. I know that maybe the difference here is that those two guys are good guys who don't take themselves that seriously. Doesn't mean they're not intense competitors and want to kill each other, but they also, like, they don't take themselves so seriously. We both know both of them, and I think I can speak for you. We both like both of them. And so for them to, I don't know, they just had a human moment after an intense game between rivals, and I thought that perhaps it shouldn't even stand out, but given how infrequently that something like that happens, it was noticeable to me.
Yeah, no, that was nice to see. And, you know, hopefully, and I think this is the plan here, I mean, this series is not going to go away. As it shouldn't. Washington benefits as much as Gonzaga does at this point. You know, for a long time, it would have been a kind of situation where Washington was not going to schedule Gonzaga, but we're so far past that, you know, it makes complete sense. We talked about this a little bit on the Friday podcast. When you have natural geographic rivals that benefit both programs and just the area itself, It was nice to see that. And I will also note Washington, I mean, it got good games out of Isaiah Stewart and Jaden McDaniels. Collectively, they played well. I thought McDaniels had one of his stronger games. They combined for like 36 points. Some turnovers hurt him overall. They had a few shots you'd want back near the end there, and I think Gonzaga 12 or 13 steals overall, so that was a big factor there. But, yeah, I agree. The camaraderie was nice to see. Washington, I still think, will definitely be an NCAA tournament team. This is a tough loss because when you get a quad one opportunity like this, you know, you don't want to have it go through your hands, but it did here. So Washington's losses are to Tennessee and Gonzaga. They played three legitimate opponents I mentioned previously earlier on this podcast. They defeated Baylor, which is big, and now they have two games left in their non-league schedule. They will play Seattle on Tuesday. That's obviously a home game. And I misspoke. They also play in the Diamond Head. So they will play that the days leading into Christmas. So they'll have another opportunity for at least one good quality quad one, quad two level kind of win. But right now, Washington sits at 7-2.
I would echo your thoughts about this series. You know, it did go away for a little while. I believe when Lorenzo Romar was the coach at Washington, like they stopped. Washington Gonzaga fans will know this off the top of their head, but they stopped playing for a while, and then ultimately they decided to do it. And because you've got two very good programs in the same state, anytime you've got two very good basketball programs in the same state, I'm all for playing that game. And I know that the argument against it from some coaches would be, you got to play more of a national schedule so you can, expose your program to, you know, different parts of the country. Well, like, why? Why do you need to do that? I live in Mississippi. You live in Connecticut. We both could not wait to watch Gonzaga, Washington. Why? Because it's two good basketball programs with two good basketball coaches and good basketball players all over the court. Like, that resonates everywhere. Would it have been better if Gonzaga was playing Alabama? You know, like, oh, Gonzaga, Alabama. Like, whatever, who cares? Nothing against Alabama. It's just like, you don't need to expose yourself to the South or just play compelling basketball games that your fans care about. Ultimately, this is entertaining. It's supposed to be entertaining. It is entertainment. So give your fans who you're asking to pay real money for season tickets, and they pay real money for lots of buy games. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the biggest difference between college basketball and the NBA in terms of a schedule. You know, in the NBA, like, you know, half your games, you know, more or less, I know it chops up different ways, but like every other game, you're basically playing a playoff team. Whereas in college basketball, particularly November, December, if you're a program at Washington's level or Gonzaga's level, you're going to be playing a lot of bye games that your fans pay to see, and they're total mismatches that you would never get, at least from a point spread perspective, in the NBA. So when you've got a chance to give them something they actually want and it's easy to do, then do that. And so I'm glad that Mike and Mark have kept this going, and I hope they keep it going forever and ever and ever. You ready for the podcast review?
Hold on. I got to talk about something real quick here. One of my favorite moments of the weekend. So Xavier beats Cincinnati in the crosstown shootout. They win 73-66. They get the home win. Cincinnati tries to stay in it, but Xavier's a better team. And so it goes. Did you see? I don't know who got the video, but I saw Bobby Reagan of Barstool Sports tweeted out whomever captured the video and first published it to social media. So think about how many – like, honestly, ask yourself how many coaches would have done what Travis Steele did here. So they win. It's like a – I want to say it's like a 4 o'clock local tip, maybe a 3 o'clock local tip. And so, you know, you're two and a half hours after the game's finished. Travis still has, I believe, the same blazer he had on when they won. He's got – you know, I think he's got basically the same as coaching outfit. He rolls up to this local bar, I think called Dana Gardens. I've never – Cincinnati is one of the blooming metropolises of this great country that I have never been to. So I can't identify with how far this is from campus, what it's like. I don't know. I want to go to Cincinnati and check out a Xavier Cincy game at some point soon, but I've never been there. So anyway, he rolls up with his wife and his son – who I don't know how old his son is. I'm going to say 4 at the youngest, 6 at the oldest, judging off this video. And it's a college bar. Benny and the Jets is blaring. It's packed. The local fans, you know, plenty of them are just thrilled because X won again. They beat UC. They're on top of the world. And, like, it's, you know, it's the coach of Xavier. Like, and Travis was an assistant under Chris Mack, so they know who he is. Like, if you're a Xavier fan, you live in Cincinnati, you know who Travis Steele is on site. So he just, like, casually strolls up. And at this point in the video, you're just like, okay, this is just a coach like checking out the local college bar. Kind of weird. He actually like talks to, I don't want to call this man a bouncer because he didn't look like physically dressed for the gig, so to speak. But he's like, he's like, yeah, I got my kid here. And they're like, yeah, come on in. So he goes in, and come to find out, Travis Steele's son has a wad of cash. I mean, minimum 500, maybe as much as 2 grand, and he just slaps it on the bar table. Travis, he says something to the effect of, like, I'm going to buy everyone in here a drink or a round on me, whatever it is. And I just thought this was a baller kick-ass move. I really don't know how many coaches at a top 50 program, so, you know, throw in, you know, 50 to 60 names that would qualify for those that are on the fringe, would go to the local college bar with their child. And brought, like, no judgment here. I thought this was great. Kind of just walk into that whole thing and do this and then buy drinks. Like, you know what? You're a legend for the weekend for winning the game. You're a legend for the rest of the season for doing that. And that's also, you know, clearly one of the two or three biggest wins that he has had yet as a head coach. You know, beating Cincinnati in the rivalry game at home, you feel good. So I don't know if you got a chance to see the video, but I think it's awesome. I don't know what you do as an encore to top that kind of thing, but shouts to Travis Steele, shouts to his wife, and shouts to his little boy who was given the cash, and he put that stuff down with conviction. I'm sure all the local patrons were very, very thankful for it.
Well, it's a nice lesson. You give, let's just call it $1,000. You give $1,000 to your son, and he could do a whole bunch of stuff with that. Strip club.
Sure.
Drug purchase. Okay. And instead, he decides to give it to college students who could actually use it. And so, it's a generous act on behalf of the young Steele boys. So, that's a nice scene. And I guess I don't know how many coaches would do this. I mean, I've never seen videos of other coaches doing this.
Can you picture Jay Wright strolling up to a college bar near Villanova? And, I mean, listen, he'd look better than anyone doing it. But hold on, you know what? Let's go to. All right, I'm bringing up the KenPom page. I'm gonna bring up the. I'm just gonna go top 15. Yes or no? Would they do this? Can you picture them doing it? Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right, Chris Holtmann. No. No.
Here's the thing. When you make the kind of money these guys make, Travis included?
No. It's not that they don't have the – that they wouldn't be willing to spend the money. I'm talking about, like, walking into, like, the grimy college bar, like, after a win. Like, a lot of coaches – and this is nothing against them because I think I'd be the exact same way. They just don't want to, like, put themselves in that kind of situation. They're like, I don't need to be around the fans. You see what I'm saying?
Like, I could see – like, forget top 15. I'll tell you, coaches, I could see do this. I could see Chris Beard do it.
I could definitely see Chris Beard do it. I agree with that.
I could see Bruce Pearl do it for as a publicity thing.
I could see Bruce Pearl do this, yes. I could see Bill Self do it.
I could see Bill Self probably has done it. I could see – I'm going through the list now. Other guys – who are fun and like I could see Will Wade make a strong ass offer to a bar
okay.
to an entire bar.
I actually do not think Will Wade would do this. Even like like remove like any like FBI stuff. Actually, I don't think Will Wade would do that. No, I don't think.
By the way, we never discussed this. I don't think. But Will Wade at VCU hugging the fake FBI people.
Oh, so
was
good.
Terrific.
Oh yeah. So I mean good. that's like a month ago. That was so good, and the photos taken of that.
Yeah, no, and if you're him, you just lean into it and laugh. He handled that perfectly. I thought it was great. Going through the list still, I'm scanning.
Not many.
Yeah, I think we nailed the people who would probably do something like that.
Chris Mack, maybe.
I could see Chris Mack definitely.
See that he toilet papered the football coach Scott Satterfield's house. Apparently he did. I don't know. It was you didn't see that? Because he won ACC Coach of the Year. He won ACC Coach of the Year, and then like you know, as like a goodwill, like I don't know, playful gesture. It was cool. Tony Bennett definitely not even close.
I can't even see Tony Bennett walking into a college bar under any circumstances.
I know. There are a lot of least likely. It's a dead heat runaway between Mike Krzyzewski and Tony Bennett for the least likely person on this to do. I'm trying to think if there's one more at like a power conference.
Jim Boeheim?
He's more likely than Tony Bennett and Mike Krzyzewski. Tweet us if you think you got a coach that is likely to do this that we haven't talked about yet. I definitely want to hear it. It's not that many, but you're right. I think the most likely is probably Chris Beard because he's just so relaxed, so loose. And on a, like this is a testament to Beard and what we know of him and his character. Like he would not give an F. He'd be like, if the tab for the entire bar for the entire night is 11 grand and I just got like the biggest win of my career, it's all on me. I don't even care. I think that he is he's one of the runaway winners. So anyway,
I would argue that when you make the kind of money that people were talking about make, you could like if you really want to be calculated, it's worth $1,000 out of your pocket that has millions to get the social media buzz that you would get off of something like this. I bet you somebody somewhere could tell you that that thing that you're going to do is very much worth $1,000 in publicity.
Oh, without a doubt. You're absolutely right. But as I look up and down, there's just like – and again, it's nothing against the guys that wouldn't do it, but I just don't think that a lot of guys would do it. I just love that he brought his kid and his kid had the money. I thought that was fantastic.
I could see Lane Kiffin do it down in Oxford.
Oh, well, we're going to – we will
– did you see the video of him?
Oh, I saw it, and someone told him to get a burner phone?
Yes. Ooh. So he's after the press conference tonight at some point, he's meeting with fans, you know, like they do, and he's taking pictures and holding babies. And this Ole Miss fan who is like stereotypical Ole Miss fan, he's like, hey, coach, we're glad to have you here. And Lane's like, thank you. And he's like, go get yourself a burner phone, all right? Because, of course, that's the way Hugh Freeze got busted. He was using his university phone to set up appointments with people you're not supposed to set up appointments with when you're married and a public official.
All right. So do you want to do – listen, I got something that I'm gonna play for you here. Now, listeners, Parrish doesn't know what I'm about to play for him, full disclosure here, but I do think it will bring a smile to his face and also will bring up a quick talking point. But this was brought to my attention in the past 48 hours or so. Do you want to read the review first? Or do you want me to play what I'm about to play, which kind of like it's related to like college basketball podcast stuff?
Okay, we'll knock the review out first.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, so I have promised that every Sunday in an attempt, I'm transparent here, in an attempt to get more people to subscribe and get more people to rate and leave reviews, I said, hey, listen, I'll pick out one every week, and we'll read it on Sunday's podcast. We'll shout you out. You'll be right there with Larnell and Terry Teagle. And the reviews have picked up. Now, I'm only going to do one every week because – honestly, it would sound ridiculous, me just reading nice stuff about myself over and over again. But I am shallow enough to read them privately, every word, and I do. So thank you to everybody. Like, if you've left a review, I have read it, I promise, and it certainly brought a smile to my face. But I pick out one to use for the purposes of the podcast. And this one comes from Andy Wolverine. From Michigan.
Do you think his do you think his last name is actually Wolverine?
So. I hope so.
I really hope so too, actually.
I bet he's a Michigan Wolverine fan whose last name is something other than Wolverine.
But
for the purposes of this podcast, he will be Andy Wolverine.
Yes.
So here's what he writes. He writes, Parrish in Orlando. I've been a huge fan of the ION podcast for several years. I love its rich basketball content, the high-level analysis from hosts who love the game, and humorous banter. Last week, while driving home from up north in Michigan, I introduced my wife to the podcast, thinking she might like the discussion about our Wolverines' Battle of Atlantis championship. Not only did she love the breakdown of the tournament, but the levity and connection between you guys. At the end of the pod, after we both laughed at Parrish's story of beating the hell out of his play structure, she asked, quote, when are these guys on again? Her newly found affinity for the show proves it resonates with rabid college basketball fans as well as the casual fan. Keep up the great work. Hashtag double tennis elbow. That's from Andy in Birmingham, Michigan.
Well, Andy, thank you to your wife. We didn't get a name in there, did we? Let's call her Betsy. No. Betsy Wolverine. Yeah. All right.
We'll call her Mrs. She'll be Mrs. Wolverine.
You know, there aren't a lot of Betsy's in the world anymore. That's a name that should come back. You're worried about Gary going away forever? Betsy's an underrated name, by the way.
Is Betsy the girl in
I have no idea where you're going with this.
Glow?
I have not seen Glow. I'm about to, when we wrap up this pod, I'm about to watch the final episode of season 3 of Stranger Things, which has been just okay. Anyway, that was a great review. How about this, Mrs. Wolverine? If you want to drop your own review and rating, perhaps Parrish will read it.
It's Betty. Betty Gilpin.
Okay. Okay. Whatever, dude. Talking about.
I like her. Glow. She plays Debbie.
You're like, oh, man, it's Betty. I knew it. Okay. We are loving the reviews. Please keep it coming. And on some podcast soon, I'm going to give shouts to. We're getting all this data. First of all, I do want to say this before I get to what I want to play. November, I was told, was our most downloaded month ever. Not like during March, during the tournament, this past November. Most downloaded month ever. Thank you to everyone that keeps doing it. It's highly appreciated. And we apparently have listeners in New Zealand and all over the place. So if you're from New Zealand, why don't you drop a review in the bucket? Drop a review in the bucket. Parrish will find you and maybe we'll give you a call. Okay. Now, I'm going to play this without preamble. I'm just going to play it for you. And then I want your reaction, then I'll kind of explain what's about to happen here. But we're going to have some inter-podcast whatnots going on. But this has to do with a review of a college basketball podcast that we got injected into, and the hosts don't really know what's going on. It's actually pretty funny. Here we go.
Good. Marquette fan and alum. He says we're mean to Marquette, but he understands. Other than that, he likes the podcast, though he does wish there could be some discussion on camel fighting. And admittedly, I have no idea what this is, unless it's like literally just two camels fighting, in which case I'm very much for it. So I apologize if I'm missing some like big pop culture thing that's going on right now.
Yeah, Jim, what do you know about this? I'm pretty not woke.
I know absolutely nothing about camel fighting.
Wow, over three.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, like, would they swing their humps at each other?
Yeah, here's what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to Google camel fighting.
Agreed.
That. But Josh's question, though, which is what we should talk about very seriously here. Who would win in a 2-on-2 tournament between the following teams? ION College Basketball, that is CBS, the new OSP, a.k.a. Titus and Tate, or the 3MW? So us, presumably we have a sub.
Oh, I thought we get to play all three of us. That'd be sweet.
The answers are resounding us, by the way.
So, question, are we subbing or are we cutting the weakest link of us three?
We can sub. Titus obviously played college basketball, yeah. But guys, I think we got
Tate's got game too, I think, right?
Does he have game?
Tate's pretty, I actually talked to them about this a bunch in Maui, because I didn't know if Tate had game, so I asked him. They both claim that he does. I also watched Titus put on his Adam Morrison jersey and just absolutely light it up on the Maui rims. He definitely still has a jumper. Here it so, comes. And he's taller than you remember. He's like 6'4", pushing 6'5".
Yeah, he's a good size.
Good size.
So I got to believe we would both murder Ion College basketball.
I will say Norlander has got good size, though, too. Good frame.
You're damn right.
He's good, what, 6'3", 6'4", also?
Yeah, but I think Parrish we could exploit. That's just an easy ISO post up, and we'll go to work inside.
Get Parrish in the post a little bit, and body him.
Gary, like, much love to you, man. It's nothing personal. It's just, it's business, right? We're trying to win a tournament here.
Yeah, that's attack mismatches. That's right.
So maybe a future game on the horizon. But anyways, thanks for the review.
There we go. So that is shouts to the guys from Three Man Weave. Great stuff there. Oh, my gosh. So first of all, back to front. They are right. Shouts to whomever left that review for Three Men Weave. Please leave us one, and we can address this as well on a future podcast. I am 6'3", and certainly can hold my own, but you're going to hold us back in a 2-on-2. I know that's going to be the case. I will say this: Parrish is a very good athlete, though. Like legit. Like I've gone to a batting cage with Parrish, and I've gone to a batting cage with Parrish, and he has made serious contact. Like, if you've ever gone to a pitching machine and tried to hit like an 80-mile-per-hour ball, it's insanely hard. And I went with Parrish, and he's making contact every single time. So he is a good athlete. Basketball just is not his sport. And then just the camel fighting stuff just had me. I only listened to it once because I didn't want to run myself dry on it. I was losing it, absolutely losing it, that these guys did not know what was going on with that, with the camel fighting reference. So to the person that left that review on the Three Man Weed podcast, those guys do a great job. Our just endless thanks. That was just so, so, so good.
I don't know who would win the tournament. I do agree we would finish last. And it would be because of me. I appreciate you saying I am a good athlete. I think the more accurate this way to put it would be, I was a good athlete. Like I was a club level soccer player and a 3-year starter in baseball. Like I was good, and then I wasn't, and I suffered a torn ACL my junior year of high school, and I'd never been the same since. But I was never good at basketball. I could shoot a little bit, but that's all. You know, like if you want to have a 3-point shooting contest, I could maybe not with like a real basketball player, but like me and you, I could maybe hold my own. But we would definitely finish last for two reasons. A, because I would be the worst player of all the rosters. And B, don't ever forget, I've got tennis elbow. I can't shoot a basketball. We were at a Grizzlies game a few weeks ago, and they've got a beer garden at FedEx Forum and a little Papa shot. And I was trying to shoot with my son. I couldn't shoot the basketball. It's extremely painful. So, like, right now, I wouldn't even be able to shoot. I'd have to play left-handed. And so, yes, we would lose. I will say this. Accurate description of Titus. Taller than you remember.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
Like when we bumped into Titus and Tate at the Final Four party, and you know how you dap somebody up, and you, like, you know, you tight ass, and then you hug a little bit.
What? Like,
you don't hug?
No, you just called him tight ass.
No, Titus.
That's not what you said.
So here's what I'm trying to tell you. My head was in his chest. I sort of headbutted his breast. And so taller than I remembered, and you know, I'm a short person. And beyond that, I would say this about walk-ons in general. Division I walk-ons. They get this label like, he's a walk-on, he sucks, right? You take a Division I walk-on to the, like, YMCA, and
right,
they will run that place. Yeah. The Division I walk-on was still a badass high school basketball player. So blindly, I would put my money on Titus and Tate, but I know that we would finish last. We would have no chance, and it wouldn't be your fault as much as it would be
mine. Well, just in that grouping of three, and the three-man weave guys, I mean, listen, they're they're about my height. They're slender. It looks like they know how to use a screen and roll. There's no doubt about that. But if we're getting anyone else involved in the general college basketball podcast scene, I like our chances at the bronze. I mean, because, you know, you got Goodman, and it's technically his NBA podcast, but it's Goodman and Bob Ryan. I mean, one of the best basketball writers of all time. Bob Ryan, you will just go to town on in the post, Parrish. Okay, I got Goodman.
I don't know that I'd post him up, but I don't feel like he could stay in front of me.
There's just no shot about that. Rob Doster just has a rotating cast, so he's on his own, which is what he wants because he's the biggest ball hog I've ever met, and Jack shuts up from 27 feet every time we play the media Final Four game. That's what he wants. He's got no shot. It's a 1-on-2 game. He's out on all that. Andy Katz, he's going to probably just haul in whatever coach he can get, but depending on the age, you know, Katz is in good shape. I will say this. He runs a lot of half marathons and marathons, but I've never seen Katz pull up, you know, a 17-foot fadeaway. So I don't have a lot of conviction in what he's able to do.
While we're playing our tournament, Katz would interview 11 different players.
He would.
Dude,
he'd be dribbling with one hand, then he'd bring up his phone, he'd Skype him in, and he'd record it in the other one.
Dude, I'll be at the Garden, and there's Andy doing interviews, and then the next day after, like, next night I'm at home, and I turn on, and, like, he's like in Illinois just interviewing people. And then the next day he's like at Arizona State interviewing people. I'm like, how does he get to all these places to interview all these people? He works like crazy. Every time, it's like almost any time somebody wins something, Andy Katz is there holding a microphone talking to him. It's wild.
It is wild. But anyway, thanks to the three-man weave guys and to the reviewer of that podcast. I'm so glad we did that because Parrish did not know what we were doing. I wanted to play it for him. Ears unseen, sight unseen, and camel fighting. That was just, oh my gosh, just too good. So thank you. And for those listening, I hope you very much enjoyed it as well.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Andy Wolverine. Please go subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast via Apple Podcasts. Rated favorably. 5 stars with nice comments. That's all I've ever asked of you. So please do that. And then we're going to talk to you again on Wednesday. Till then, take care.
World of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount+.
Yes!